I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. That Sophie Millman is on her way to becoming an international music star is without question. Barely 24, the Canadian jazz vocalist has reached number one on iTunes Canada, France, Japan, and the United States twice. She's also sold 100,000 albums worldwide and been on the Billboard Top 5 in Canada and the Top 15 in the United States. Add to that, maintaining a rigorous touring schedule throughout the United States and Canada, she's pursuing commerce studies at the University of Toronto. She joins me this morning to talk about her second album, Make Someone Happy, which was released earlier this year, and the Canadian tour that she's embarking on beginning December 1st. She hits London, Peterborough, Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary, and Victoria. Her Vancouver date is the 13th of December at the Centre for the Performing Arts with special guest, the pianist Michael Kieshammer. Check out her website, sophiemillman.com, for more information. I am pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Sophie Millman. Good morning, Miss Millman.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. In your book, in your bio, I should say, you describe yourself as bookish, and the photos of you on your albums and on magazine covers defy that description. Do you still think of yourself as bookish?
Absolutely. There's nothing that doesn't reconcile bookishness and sort of being concerned with appearance and everything else. I'm only recently became a little bit more of a girly girl because my career sort of demands it. But I'm still a giant nerd. Like, I prefer to read rather than do photo shoots and, go to the theater or to the symphony rather than go for facial. So I guess I'm still bookish.
Do you, you're studying commerce at the University of Toronto, correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Do you go to school now?
Yes, I'm just taking one course this year because my touring schedule is quite extensive. And it's a research study course, which allows me to sort of set my own deadlines. And I have a wonderful professor supervising me, but it's only just an essay at the end of the term, so that's gonna be fun.
I'm interested to know why commerce and not something perhaps artistic.
I was really academic even before I became a professional singer. I actually became a professional singer solely by accident. I always knew that I loved music, and I always knew that the arts are going to be part of my life in some capacity or another, but I never thought it would be a career. So when I was thinking of, what to major in, it was before I was, quote-unquote, discovered. And commerce seemed like a very interesting thing. I mean, I'm very, very logical. When I'm not singing and when I'm not involved with the artistic side of my life, I'm extremely logical and analytical. So commerce with its sort of management and economics, especially economics, poli-sci, international relations components, really spoke to me. And I really enjoy what I study. I love it.
And you're able to balance going to school and your music, right?
Well, it's tough. With every year, it becomes harder and harder. When I was just in Toronto recording, working on my first record, I could sort of do it. And then as I did more and more touring, it became increasingly difficult. And when my career went really international last year, that's when things sort of started falling apart. And I had to go part-time because it's still important for me not to just balance things but do them well. So if I'm going to school, I might as well do well and learn something. So I'm part-time now, and, it takes me a little longer to finish my degree. That's fine.
Is there a preference? Do you enjoy recording more, or do you enjoy performing live?
They're just so different. I mean, the recording studio is like a microscope, and you get to really refine your sound, and you get to really analyze yourself and the band and the arrangements, and you get to hear it back and do it over if you need to. I mean, it allows for a sort of a different level of perfection than a live situation does. But, I couldn't just make records and sit at home because it's just not fun. I love going out and performing in different areas of the world. I love being in front of an audience and receiving that sort of energy and love, because the studio is a little bit more like, it's like a lab. Do you know what I mean? It's much more clinical. You're not performing in front of the audience. You're not getting that emotional feedback that you do instantaneously in a live performance situation. And, I enjoy a good combination of both. And especially right now, with the music industry being what it is, you can't do the whole Barbra Streisand thing, not tour and just make records, because records are simply not selling. So artists are hitting the road more, and that's what I intend to do.
Are audiences different around the world wherever you perform?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even within Canada, they're different from major city to major city. And when you go internationally and you check out a place like Japan, where I've been many, many times over the past year, they're just a different kind of audience there. On one hand, they're a lot more shy. On the other hand, they give me such an enormous response. I mean, it's unbelievable. They just go nuts, and they recognize every single song, and they sing along, and it's just great. And then there are Quebec audiences in Toronto, in Canada, who are fabulous, and then the Vancouver audiences are also great. And Toronto is a little bit more reserved, I would say. It takes a little longer to get them going, but when they do, it's also a lot of fun. And the States, truly, like, I cannot believe it's one country, because people from state to state are so different, and they like different things, and some of them like more of the emotional stuff, some of them like more of the improv stuff, and you get to really check it out when you go on the road.
How do you react when you're listening to your own recordings? Do you like listening to yourself?
I used to not like it, because, you know, I'm very critical of myself. I'm totally a type A personality out of a textbook. But on the second record, I'm really proud of myself. I feel like I've made a really good record, and I don't cringe when I listen to it. I'm actually quite proud.
You've been compared to other singers, some of the great voices in jazz, and some who say that you have a sound all to yourself. You've gotten some amazing reviews. How do you react to those reviews?
The best review I've gotten so far, in my opinion, on the second record, all of the reviews have been spectacular, you know. I couldn't ask for anything more. But the best review, as far as I'm concerned, was Don Heckman in the LA Times, when he said that, "I'm not the next Ella, I'm not the next Sarah, I'm the next Sophie Millman." And for a singer that sings covers, the first impulse that reviewers and critics have is, you know, Ella-esque, she's Sarah-esque, she's Billy-esque, she's like Diana Krall, and all that is fine and good, and it's nice to hear that I remind people of some of the best singers out there. But to receive the comment that I am sort of a voice of my own, and I have something unique to contribute, that is the biggest compliment in the world, because I don't write my own music. I am an interpreter, and to, you know, get the feedback that people see that I'm doing something unique, that I'm developing an identity that's separate from everybody that I've, you know, listened to growing up, is a huge and giant step forward for me.
You listened to a lot of music growing up. Who did you listen to, and do you still listen to the same sort of music now?
I listen to all the jazz greats. I mean, singers, Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, instrumentalist Oscar Peterson, Count Basie, Glenn Miller, all the big band stuff. As I evolved as a sort of person and as a singer, I started discovering people like Carmen McRae, who's probably my favorite jazz singer of all time, Diane Reeves, Cassandra Wilson, you know, Jaco Pastorius, instrumentalist-wise. My favorite singer of all time is Stevie Wonder, bar none. And I'm really in a Stevie phase right now.
You met him recently, did you not?
What?
You met him recently?
Oh, absolutely, I did. It was an unbelievable experience. My boyfriend totally gets brownie points for that.
How did the first album do compared to the second?
Well, the second album is doing better, and justifiably so. I think it's a better album. I think it's a more mature album. The first album did really well. It sold, I think at this point, 100,000 units around the world, which is great for an indie record of a completely brand new artist. But the second album is doing great in the States, which is wonderful. It's really getting fabulous reviews and getting played on NPR. Last week, I think, I charted number one jazz record on the jazz radio stations in the States. So, you know, it's just a great feeling to get that kind of feedback. And we're doing just as well on the second record in Japan as we did on the first. So, all in all, I'm, you know, I'm really happy the career is going sort of up, and it's great.
Did you take some risks in producing the second album that were different than what you did on the first?
Sure. I mean, I was a lot more ready when I made the second record. I felt like I had a lot more to say. I've grown both personally and professionally, and you know, experienced a lot of, you know, new trials and new tribulations, etc. And I was closer at that point to figuring out what it means, you know, to be a singer, and what that means for me. Whereas on the first record, I was just a young girl with a nice voice singing her favorite songs, which is not to say that that's bad. It's just not sort of what I want to be, essentially. So on the second record, we went for songs that are a lot more personal, connect to my life experiences, emotions a lot more intensely. And we took some risks. I recorded one of my favorite Stevie Wonder songs, Rocket Love, and we recorded a Guess Who song. We chose standards that were a lot more obscure than the standards on the first record. You know, it's just trying to experiment with sounds and lyrics and styles in a way that I didn't do on the first one.
The title record on the second album is Make Someone Happy. Why did you mm-hmm. choose that?
Because I think it most closely describes my life in general, but the past 3 years in particular. I mean, on the surface, it's a love song, and it's true that I've fallen in love for the first time and got into a serious relationship for the first time in my life 3 years ago, right after I released my first record. So the song was really about that, about making another person happy. But deeper than that, it's, you know, my quest for the last 3 years was to make everybody else around me happy, and I was reconciling the needs and everything, you know, of my teachers, of my label, my agents, my producers, my, you know, PR agents, and my parents, and my boyfriend, and my friends, and trying to be all things to all people. And at a certain point, it just sort of, everything came crashing down. And the someone that I'm trying to make happy right now is myself. So it's not necessarily so much about other people anymore, it's about make someone happy, meaning make me happy. And it's been a long quest to figure out what it is that makes me happy. And the record definitely was a little bit of a therapeutic experience. You know, by singing all these songs, it was almost like catharsis, you know. So it was the most natural choice to name the record that.
A record that I really enjoyed on this album is the Kermit the Frog song, It's Not Easy Being Green.
Yeah.
And it had some personal meaning to you, I gather.
Absolutely. I think it's the song that most closely resembles, and not resembles, but describes my life in general. I've always been the outsider. I've always been a little bit of the odd duck. I've never been the popular girl in school, and always sat on the sidelines looking on to the happy, shiny, pretty people, thinking, man, why can't I be one of them? And that's how the song starts. You know, it's not that easy being green. Having to spend each day the color of the leaves sort of blending in, but through the song, the lyrics sort of change, and the little frog, or the little person that feels like a frog, discovers that, you know, it's fine, it's beautiful, and it's what I want to be. And my life has been a real testament of that, for somebody that went through two immigrations and never really fit in, to be so happy now and content, and to have a great career and a great family and a great boyfriend, and everything has sort of worked out in my life, and it sort of mirrors the lyrics of the song.
Did you identify yourself as a Canadian?
Yes, absolutely. I think if you had asked me that question 3 years ago, I would have said no. But Canada has been so incredibly good to me and my family, and even though the first years were extremely difficult, you know, socially, emotionally, financially, linguistically, in every single way possible, I feel like over the years Canada had brought out the best in my family and me, and all of us are doing extremely well. My Dad has his own consulting business in Toronto. My mom's a teacher in high school. I have a great career that I probably wouldn't have had anywhere else, and especially not in Israel, because jazz isn't really big there, and I probably wouldn't have had the opportunities. You know, my brother is a total little Canadian, and he's doing really well in school and has a lot of friends, and we built a life here. And music definitely helps me love Canada, but it's not only that that I love. It's just the multiculturalism here, the calm of the people here, the goodness in this country is unbelievable. And it really, as soon as I allowed myself to love it and to feel it, it just became natural. But in the beginning, I was an angry little immigrant 16-year-old. So you can imagine, it wasn't easy.
In terms of performing, you'll be in Vancouver December 13th.
Yeah.
What's a typical day like when you have to do a concert at 8 o'clock at night? Did you do a lot of relaxing? Do you lead a normal life, really? Or?
Well, I have to tell you, I hate show days. I love show nights, like when 8 o'clock actually hits and I go on stage. That's awesome. That's when I sort of start living and relaxing. But the hours leading up to the show, starting from the moment I wake up and ending with the moment I go on stage, are like hell, you know. So it's the waiting game. You know, there's this thing, hurry up and wait, and that's what it is. You know, you get up, you warm up your voice, you figure out what you're going to wear, you can't really eat properly because, you know, it can't be too full, you can't be too hungry, then you have a sound check, and hopefully things go well and it's quick, and if they don't go well, it can last up until, you know, 15 minutes before showtime. And, you know, by the time the band sets up and all this different stuff, you know, it's tricky, you know, but it's all made up for when the lights go on, the PA goes on, and there's an audience there, and, you know, it's great. But it's definitely not a normal life. When I'm on the road, there's no real relaxation. There's no, you know, because you're always preoccupied with details of the show and, you know, pre-show jitters and everything else.
Your playlist for the shows, is that the same throughout Canada, or do you change it, do you tweak it a bit?
We change it sometimes. I mean, we don't change it based on where we are, but we definitely don't like to play the same set night in, night out. Although there is, you know, a core to the show that's consistent. So we play our best stuff from city to city, and as well as songs that, you know, we just like to perform live that are not from either record. They're just great live numbers. We try to keep it fresh for the audience and also for us, because it does get a little tedious when you play the same stuff over and over and over again. Especially jazz musicians, we get bored extremely easily. We always need that sort of angle.
And you talked about the anxiety before going on stage. Once you're finished your concerts, what's it like after? Is it hard to come down? I mean, do you go
I'm like a complete energizer bunny for about an hour after the show. Like, I can't stop jumping around. I just can't calm down. And then I crash. I pass out. That's how it usually works. So if the band and I go out, I don't usually last long past about an hour after the show. And I'm extremely hungry, which is not good, because we finish around 11:30, and then I'm off to eat pasta, because that's what I feel like I need.
We're roughly the same age. What do you do for fun? Do you do things that most people our age do?
I don't know. What do you do for fun?
You know, go on the internet, watch TV, go to movies and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I read for fun, I paint for fun. But I go to movies. We go see a lot of concerts. And last night, for example, my boyfriend and I went to see Bruce Springsteen. And it was honestly one of the most exhilarating, you know, few hours of my life. It was unbelievable. We go to movies and we watch TV. I'm a huge CSI addict, which is really awful, because, you know, half my day goes to that. But generally, like, I'm just a normal 24-year-old.
And I really enjoyed talking to you today, and I enjoyed listening to the albums, and I want to congratulate you on that. And
thanks so much, Joseph.
And offer a break a leg for the tour.
Don't tell me that, because on my first show ever, first public show ever, actually, I fell on stage on my face and twisted my ankle.
Is that right?
So, yeah, whenever people say break a leg, I say, oh, come on, don't tell me that.
I take that back.
Yeah, break a finger or something.
Sure.
Yeah, that's cool.